MechCast, Wednesday, August 7th, 2019. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Well, here we are. Another week has gone by, and of course, there is a bunch of Apple news and information to share with you, along with a few little questions, tips and tricks, a little follow-up from previous episodes of the MechCast. Hope you are having a great week so far. Apple has had a pretty good week. We're going to kick off the news with that. They have some numbers to share with us. We're going to talk about some recent hires and maybe developments for future products. Talk a little bit about some new rumors surrounding this year's iPhone and Apple Card. Yeah, what's going on with that? Some of you may have had an opportunity to maybe sign up for one. We'll talk about that as well, and that's going to round out the news, so not a ton of stuff happening. Then we're going to follow up on some of my comments from the previous episode about rumors and covering rumors on the MechCast. I got some feedback from you. We're going to talk about some of the Siri stuff that we went over in the last episode of the MechCast. Yeah, Apple made some changes with the recording stuff, and I have some opinions on that I want to share with you. Also, we have a question about missing comments, and also we'll talk a little bit about my possible next Mac purchase. I may need your help kind of figuring out. Maybe you need to talk me off a ledge. I don't know. We're going to talk about buying Macs and Mac upgrade cycles and all that fun stuff and what kinds of machines to get, and that will round out this episode of the MechCast. So I don't want to waste any more time diving into things, but we do have to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor. We love our sponsors here on the MechCast, and I absolutely love this sponsor because they help me bring you the show each and every week. It's Cashfly. I love them because really without them, you wouldn't be hearing this show right now. And they make sure the episodes get out quickly and reliably, and they do a great job of it. And they can also do that for your business. They can make sure that your websites load quickly so that people don't lose interest. As a matter of fact, for every second it takes a page to load, it costs a company about 16% in engagement. That means fewer visits, fewer customers, and that is not good. That's why Cashfly has your back with their new web optimization capabilities. All of your content will be optimized before it is delivered to your visitors without requiring any development effort from you. With the recent addition of Cashfly's Flexible Edge application platform and implementation services, their capabilities reach far beyond that of any traditional CDN. Cashfly's web content optimization solution includes powerful APIs for solving your content distribution problems, on-the-fly next-generation image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. All important things if you're trying to deliver your websites quickly and reliably to your customers. Listen, if your website is directly tied to your revenue, and you know it is, you want to optimize your site's content now. Guarantee the best user experience for all your customers, no matter where they are or what device they're using, and do it today. The folks at Cashfly are even going to help you out. They're going to give you a free optimization consultation just for listeners of this podcast. That's right, just for you. That way, you can know exactly where your site stands today. You can get a Lighthouse score report and learn how Cashfly's web optimization solution can help you add 60 points to your score. Just visit mac.cashfly.com. That's mac.cashefly.com. mac.cashfly.com to get your free Lighthouse score report and learn how Cashfly can help you. And a big thank you to Cashfly for their support of the MechCast. We have some numbers to talk about here at the top of the show. That's because Apple announced their third quarter results for 2019. And Apple had their largest third quarter ever. So good news, just by a hair, though, up only about 1%. So not a huge gain year over year, but they did make $53.8 billion in revenue with just over $10 billion in profit. I would say that's not too shabby. Revenue was actually up across the board for most of their products and services. Mac revenue was up 11% year over year, coming in at $5.82 billion. iPad revenue up 8% at $5.02 billion. Services up 13% at $11.46 billion. And other, that's their wearables, home products, and accessories, those revenues were up a whopping 68%. Massive growth there. $5.53 billion. I guess a lot of you are buying them Apple Watches and AirPods and such. Guess what wasn't up, though? You might have noticed what I didn't say in that list. Yep, iPhone. Actually, iPhone, not too surprisingly, down, a little bit larger down than I would have thought, 12% year over year. Also, for the first time in a long time, that means that iPhone makes up less than 50% of Apple's overall revenue. It came in at 48%. Services actually now account for 21%, so that is up. Max 11%. That other category, those wearables, home products and accessories, that would be like your HomePod and your cables and all those sorts of things, that's at 10%, and then iPad at 9%. So that is the makeup of Apple's products, and it's very interesting to see services going up and some of the other things going up while iPhone starts to dwindle off. And this isn't anything surprising. Some analysts and some sites were spelling it sort of as doom and gloom, right? But we knew this, right? We as Apple fans knew that the iPhone is slowing down and that Apple is going to start to make up with it with things like services. And Apple's obviously planned for it, and the numbers are reflecting that. So I think overall, it's looking pretty good. The other thing regarding iPhone is that there are still more active installed iPhones in the market than ever. That number is actually up slightly from a year ago. That means lots of people still have iPhones. They're just holding on to the ones that they have and maybe even handing ones down to their friends and family. I know we do that in our family, and I know many of you do that as well. So we've actually got more people using iPhones than ever before, and that is really good news for the growth of the services business. And again, I think that's why we're seeing that reflected in the numbers. We also have good Mac numbers, and what's interesting to me about the Mac numbers is that we got a new MacBook Pro model, new MacBook Air, and we've got the new Mac Pro on the horizon along with the Apple Pro display, so all that hardware stuff, and that doesn't even factor into these numbers because those products weren't out in the market yet when these numbers swung around. I think maybe they might have cut the tail end of the Mac Pro MacBook Air, but I don't even think that's the case. So Mac numbers, I would expect for the next quarter to look phenomenal. And also just good news on the iPad front. It's a lot of people investing, buying iPads, which is interesting, especially given the fact that overall tablet sales for the industry are down about 5%. So Apple actually gaining sales in a declining tablet market as well. So like I said, overall, these are pretty good numbers. The services growth, of course, is significant, especially considering that we still have many new services on the way as well. There's a number of them that aren't here yet. Apple Card, Apple Arcade, Apple TV Plus, all yet to come. So this is coming on the backs of things like iCloud and Apple Music, which is both of which have been seeing, you know, phenomenal growth and new customers arriving daily. So all very good news, in my opinion. Just a few other odds and ends, things kind of coming out of the Q&A in the quarterly results call, as well as just a few other things of note that I noticed. Apple would like to keep making the Mac Pro in the U.S. Tim Cook got asked about this in the Q&A. He says, quote, "We've been making the Mac Pro in the United States, and we want to continue doing that." If you remember, the Wall Street Journal had said that the upcoming 2019 MacBook Pro would be assembled by Quanta Computer in China. The current Mac Pro has been being made in the United States and manufactured in the United States, or assembled in the United States, I should say. And that was looking to change. Apple now saying they don't necessarily want to change that. It was not clear, sort of, from Tim Cook's statement what he meant by that. They could still do assembly in China and then do a lot of the production here in the U.S. So we don't really know how that's going to play out. And he didn't specify. It was just very vague. Hey, we want to keep making the Mac Pro in the United States if we can. So we'll have to stay tuned and see what happens. Considering the Mac Pro should be arriving any day now, you would think that assembly was already going on. And I'm guessing it is happening in China. So hopefully he'll get pressed at some point and we'll get a little more clarity on what he means by the Mac Pro being in the U.S. Already mentioned the iPad growth outpacing the overall market. And Apple Watch likely helped the massive other category growth as well, because Strategy Analytics came out with some estimates. Now, Apple doesn't report actual numbers, but their estimates show that about half the smartwatches shipped worldwide in the second quarter were from Apple. They believe that Apple shipped 5.7 million Apple Watches. That represents about a 46% share of the market. And frankly, no one else was even close. Samsung didn't do too shabby with 2 million units shipped, but that's less than half the number of watches that Apple shipped. So Apple doing very well on the wearables front. And I have to tell you, I see AirPods in people's ears when I'm out and about, and I see Apple Watches on their wrists. So it's definitely showing, at least here in the States. I'm not sure how it is in other countries. But if you have a report from your region and want to chime in, shoot us an email, maccast@gmail.com. But overall, very solid quarter for Apple. Some things have shaken out since then with the news and stuff like that. So the stock price maybe isn't reflecting how well Apple did. And they also gave some pretty good guidance for the next quarter. So things are looking up for the rest of the year for Apple. I think they are going to do just fine. Don't they always do just fine? Yeah, it's only sort of the outsiders that tend to want to spell doom and gloom for Apple. Everybody's still waiting for them to fail, and they just don't seem to be on that trajectory, which makes me as an Apple fan very, very happy. Speaking of upcoming products and new things that they might be working on, we know that Apple has been seriously investing in augmented reality, virtual reality, games, and all those sorts of things. They made a new hire this past week, Xbox co-creator Nat Brown. He announced on Twitter that he had joined Apple. Brown also worked in VR at Valve, so his credentials are very solid. He's going to be a great addition to Apple's team. We know that Apple is focused on AR and games in recent years. We have the rumors that they might be looking to add 3D time of flight sensors to the cameras in the iPhone in 2020, so that would hint at them doing more with augmented reality. Brown has said he's fascinated by how hard games push hardware and software and the hardware platforms. And so he sort of enjoys working on that. And what better place to work on that than at Apple, where you have the tight integration of hardware and software. So really pushing the boundaries, being able to tweak things like the processors to do what you want them to do. And he sounded, you know, from the Twitter thing, very excited to be joining Apple. Of course, we have Apple Arcade right around the corner, so it makes sense there as well. We don't really know specifically what he's going to be working on, whether it's AR, VR, Apple Arcade, all of the above. I would imagine it's a little bit of all of the above, and it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. Apple also moved Kim Vorath, their lead for program management on their software development team, over to the AR and virtual reality teams. So Apple definitely looking toward the future of what the next big thing is going to be, sort of after iPhone. We're in that, a lot of people are calling it the after iPhone period. So I guess that would be AI or AIP. AI is better, although it might just be confused with artificial intelligence, other technology that Apple is working on. But back to Kim. Kim was known for making sure that the development team stayed on track, meeting their deadlines, also helped out with testing software and fixing bugs, and is expected to continue that over on the AR and VR teams. So that would seem to indicate they're looking to push some products out soon. Of course, we know that they announced a new updated version of ARKit, so that would probably be the immediate focus, but we've been hearing about things like augmented reality or virtual reality headsets. And also, I think a lot of those technologies may make their way into Apple's rumored car project. I still think it'd be very, very cool to have a autonomous vehicle. And as you're sitting in it driving around on the windshields, which aren't probably really windshields, they're probably screens displaying images from outside, they could overlay all kinds of data, information on traffic patterns, weather, you could have sports scores, you could have locations, augmented reality, point of interest places pop up. Those could be touch screens. You could touch on them, get more information, right? Because if we're not driving in our cars, if we're just riding, we're going to want all kinds of forms of information and entertainment. And Apple, I think part of the car project is selling products and services that go around the riding experience or the rideshare experience. And so I think a lot of these technologies and a lot of these hires are going to go into developing that kind of those kinds of services and software around the hardware that Apple will be putting out in the future. So we're moving into some interesting times, moving away from iPhone and some of the products that we're used to and moving on to new experiences. And as we all know, Apple is great at adapting and creating new user experiences or improved user experiences, and really focusing on taking those to the next level. So not just putting out the technology and the products for the sake of the technology and products, but really thinking about how is this going to make our lives better? How is it going to make the experience of interacting and engaging with this technology better? And they do so well at that. And this seems to be what they're looking to do by hiring this kind of talent. And it's always fun to see. Looks like a rumor from last year's iPhone buildup has looped all the way around and crept into this year. Rumors are swirling around once again that we might get Apple Pencil support on this year's iPhone in 2019. As a matter of fact, Ming-Chi Kuo has said in the past that there was a possibility of Apple adding Apple Pencil support to the iPhone lineup at some point in the future. Many are feeling that that future is now, and I find this a little bit interesting. We talked about it on the iOS show for a bit, and I could see Apple adding Apple Pencil support to the iPhone at this point. I know Steve Jobs famously said the only stylus we need is our finger, but there's a lot of people who would prefer to actually have a real stylus with their device, especially like on a larger device like the iPhone XS Max. And the technology exists. I think Apple might go with just Generation 1 Apple Pencil support. And this is kind of what we talked about on that iOS show. Would it be Apple Pencil 2, Apple Pencil 1? I think it's just the application that I see on an iPhone would be mostly sort of as a point-and-click device and then also for taking notes, almost like a notepad. I'm sure there's some artists out there that would like the ability to kind of draw on their phone, but I see that more being a iPad kind of application. So note taking, and you wouldn't need a very sophisticated device. And it gives a reason for the original Apple Pencil to kind of still stay in the market. You would have the ability to charge it through the Lightning connector because it is believed that this year's iPhones would retain that connector. And while they are expected to kind of get that backpack wireless charging, I don't see like clicking and attaching an Apple Pencil 2 to your iPhone. There's kind of no good attachment point. Not that like sticking it in the Lightning port is that great of an attachment point either. I guess we have to think about that. But to kind of just like stick it on the back, and just lining it up would be a little bit difficult too. I think the coil works with the iPad because it's on the side and it has the same sort of shape, and you'd have to have that kind of a contact point for it to really work on an iPhone. So I could see them just saying, hey, and by the way, almost as like an aside, you can use the Apple Pencil with your iPhone. And just like they did with the 9.7-inch iPad, they added Apple Pencil support. It's Generation 1 Pencil support, and it's there if you want it. It's not like a big selling feature, but I'm sure there's a percentage of the market that would like to have it. So I could see that happening this year. I give it, as I said on the iOS show, about a 50-50 chance. I'm not putting too much stock in this rumor, but if it happened at the announcement in the fall, I would not be shocked. Also, in the same report that talked about Apple Pencil support coming to the iPhone, it came from Citi Research. They mention a possible update to the cameras, 10-megapixel front-facing camera, they're saying, and upgraded 14-megapixel versions of the rear camera sensor. So nice little camera bump potentially on this year's iPhone. And good news, if Apple does get hit with new tariffs on iPhone components coming out of China, it's looking like they're expected to eat the cost, not us. Most people would think that Apple would just pass it along, but Ming-Chi Kuo believes that, quote, the tariff may not impact the prices of Apple's hardware products in the United States. Okay, well, that's that last part, that means it might be good news for us here in the States. Maybe not for you, depending upon what country you're in. I know Apple often, you know, makes you pay country taxes, and that's not cool. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But at least if the cost of Apple making iPhones goes up, it's sounding like they may not pass that on to consumers. Now, of course, that could sting for Apple's profits, which might not be good because that could in turn impact their quarterly results. And then that in turn impacts their stock price. But maybe not, because Kuo also believes that Apple's non-Chinese production locations could meet most of their demand for the U.S. market within a couple years. So there might be an immediate short-term hit, but Apple has been diversifying where they're doing their manufacturing and getting components from. And as Tim Cook talked about in the quarterly results call, he wouldn't put too much stock in worrying about that. Apple has lots of choices and options when it comes to suppliers and places where they can get stuff, and they have, I'm sure, been on top of this. They're not getting caught off guard, and they have plans one way or the other. I'm just happy to hear that maybe it won't be passed on to consumers. And I think partly because Apple is also keenly aware that buyers are a lot more sensitive to iPhone price points now, right? We've gotten to the point, again, where people are willing to hold on to their existing hardware longer. So if Apple plays too much with the price and goes too high, consumers will just opt not to buy. And I think Apple knows that as well. So it probably a little better bet to take a little less profit and keep selling larger numbers of units, right? Make it up in volume if you can. And that's what I think they're going to do. And that's what is seemingly being indicated by some of the reports this week about what will happen with Apple pricing if those tariffs should go into effect. We're also expecting to see some iPad updates this fall, with Apple updating their entry-level 9.7-inch model to a new 10.2-inch version. Like they've done with a number of other products, the physical size is expected to remain similar to the current 9.7-inch model. They'll just reduce the bezels and cram a larger screen in there. I don't know if that also means that they could possibly switch to using Face ID in that entry-level model. I would expect not, but they may have to kind of get that size. And I do expect that we would see a processor bump in the updated version. And again, that's expected to be announced sometime in the fall, probably at a separate event from the iPhone event, which usually happens in September. And then that's usually followed up with another event in October. As far as 2021 is concerned, we do have some iPhone rumors related to that. Face ID and on-display fingerprint sensors, according to Ming-Chi Kuo. He thinks that Apple could add both biometric technologies, and I've always thought that to be a little bit weird, especially considering the fact that Apple has invested so heavily in convincing us that Face ID is the far superior technology to fingerprint technology. But the more I think about it and the more I read about it, it does make sense that Apple could opt for giving consumers choice and convenience because, as you know, there's situations for each of those technologies and different scenarios for each of those technologies where they sort of fall over, right? Fingerprint sensors don't work if you're in a cold environment and you have to wear gloves. Face sensors don't necessarily work if you're wearing large glasses or you have stuff that covers your face, or maybe you just don't want to have to look over at your device and give it your attention. You want to just reach across a desk or a table and boom, open something up with your finger. Also, I've heard people complain that Face ID is often just too good, right? Somebody could sneak up behind you when you have your phone already unlocked or simply put it in front of your face and it will unlock and then they run off with it. And they that has happened. Usually when it's a sister or a sibling or a brother or something pranking their other sibling, but you know, it is a thing. So there could be an advantage to having both. And if they can get that under display fingerprint sensor working, so far that technology, I know it's in some Android devices, some other devices that are on the market now, it's had sort of mixed reviews. I think some of the early versions were not so great and they've gotten better, but probably not as good as the current fingerprint sensor technology we have, especially the Touch ID sensors. But you know, leave it to Apple to maybe push it to the next level. And they do have a little bit of time to do it because, again, we're talking about 2021. So we're still about 2 years off from that technology hitting an iPhone that we can actually purchase. But that's kind of the latest with iPhone rumors and news. Going to finish up this episode or the news for this week. We're not finishing the episode. I jumped the gun a little bit there. Finish up the news for this week talking a little bit about Apple Card. I know that you know that I've said I am kind of excited about Apple Card. I've never really thought I'd say I was excited about a credit card, but I'm kind of chomping at the bit to get mine. And a little bit crushed this week to find out that TechCrunch says Apple has finally started rolling Apple Card out to a, quote, very small group of customers. And this isn't like, you know, people that are Apple employees, like we've talked about in the past. This is actually the general public. It appears to be people who signed up on Apple's website to get notified about Apple Card. I signed up day one, like the minute I heard about Apple Card, and I did not get an email. But apparently, some of you are getting email invitations to activate your Apple Card. The way it works is you click on or tap on the link in the email. It will open up the wallet app on your iPhone and then walk you through the process, the application process, which supposedly takes like a minute, maybe less. It's a very, very quick process. Sign up is easy. You'll be presented right there on your device with your credit card limit and rate offer. If you accept that, the Apple Card will be added to your wallet and you can make purchases within minutes using that via Apple Pay. The physical cards will take a few more weeks to get those. Those are the titanium, really cool credit cards, and they get sent. One thing to note, sign-up process, super, super easy. The reviewers have already commented that if you want to cancel your Apple Card, it's not as easy. You're not going to be doing that from the app. You're actually going to have to call Goldman Sachs, who is the bank behind the card. It is a MasterCard, in case you're wondering. And when you get your interest rates, they are as low now as 12.99%, going all the way up to 23.99%, depending upon your credit score, credit rating, all that sort of stuff. So people are getting different rates, obviously different credit limits, all dependent upon your credit worthiness. As far as how the card works, once you start making purchases, it does allow you to kind of see your purchase history, track the kinds of purchases you're making. You, of course, manage your payments. You can make multiple payments. It's got all these great consumer-facing features that all are activated through the app. Apple will never see your transactions. Your spending behavior is actually all calculated and done right there on your device. Obviously, Goldman Sachs, because they have to process the credit card transactions, they do see those transactions, but they have agreed to never share your purchase information with third parties or ever use it for advertising. So there is a privacy focus on the Apple Card, not surprising considering the company that is behind it. I think partially to that end, you can also not export your spending data from the app with Apple Card. So if you want to take that into a financial services app like Mint, that's not going to work at launch. I have a feeling that's something that Apple is working on, and they will add that ability at some point in the future. But officially at launch, you're not going to be able to integrate with apps like Mint. And actually, the data would only be available on your iPhone in the Wallet app. There's not even an iPad version of Wallet yet, although we have heard rumors that Apple is working on an iPad app that would allow you to manage your Apple Card. So any of you received one yet? Have you signed up? Got your Apple Card? I know not the physical card, but have you signed up and are you using the digital version via Apple Pay? What do you think about it? Are you enjoying it? I have not received my invitation yet. I am checking my mail and my email every day, actually probably every few minutes, if I'm being totally honest. Keep hoping that I'll see mine. And of course, once I get it, I will talk about the experience and share my thoughts here on a future episode of the MacCast. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Linode. Hey, look, if you need hosting for your website, if you want to get a server for doing something like a VPN, or maybe you want a gaming server, and you want a great choice in how you set that up, I really recommend that you check out Linode. Linode allows you to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in their Linode cloud, and you can get up and running literally in seconds with the Linux distribution of your choice. You also have your choice of resources and your choice of location of where you want your server. 10 different Linode locations. And best of all, they're giving MacCast customers a $20 credit. If you want to set up something like a Minecraft server, which is what I did on my Linode, they have one-click installs for that, for installing gaming servers, Minecraft, Ark, Terraria, a whole bunch more. They also have one-click installs for things like WordPress, so you want to get a blog up and running, Drupal, GitLab, if you want to do version control for your software project, or OpenVPN. You want to set up your own VPN, they make it quick and easy. They have a whole bunch of distributions. Basically, if it runs on Linux, it's going to run on Linode. And most of those distributions are available out of the box. But you can also upload your own custom images if you want to totally configure it and create your own. Basically, you can build whatever kind of server you want. And they're great servers. They feature SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and leading industry processors. And like I said, you can pick from your choice of locations so you can get it near you. And they just opened their newest data center in Toronto, and it's built using the most up-to-date hardware and their next generation network backbone. And what's cool about having locally regionalized data centers is that it does help you comply with in-country data protection requirements and allows you to take advantage of all of Linode's technologies and tools. They do have an additional data center opening in Mumbai, India by the end of 2019. They also make pricing super simple with no surprise fees. You pay for what you use with hourly billing across all of their plans and add-on services. You can get what you need starting as low as $5 a month for their nanode plans, all the way up to high-powered dedicated CPU plans. So again, they have you covered across the board. And their dashboard, their manager, makes it really easy to upgrade your plan if you need to. You can add on services like backup, large storage volumes and load balancing quickly and easily, and they have great 24/7 customer service and support, along with a large documentation library, which is a great resource if you get stuck. So visit linode.com/maccast to set up your first Linode and get a $20 credit when you use the promo code MACCAST2019. That's MACCAST2019. Use that code to get your $20 credit and sign up at linode.com/maccast. Huge thank you to Linode for their support of the show. What do you think about rumors and covering Mac rumors here on the MacCast? This was something that we brought up in the last episode of the MacCast. Actually, a listener emailed in and said, hey, I know. I think that rumors and all the rumors that we get about Apple products are sort of spoiling the keynotes for me. And I can totally see that point of view. And we talked about that a little bit. I shared some of my thoughts on it and my feelings that personally for me, the rumors don't necessarily ruin the surprises. I think we still get some surprises at the keynotes. Maybe we know a lot of it going into it, but I still get excited to kind of see what's confirmed, what we actually see. And I asked many of you to email and write in and say what you thought about this. You know, do all of the rumors and information that we get prior to Apple's keynotes really ruin the surprise? And most of you were very kind to me because I had sort of done a little self-deprecating and said, you know, I'm probably guilty of spoiling those keynotes for a lot of people. And I'm kind of okay with that. I don't really mind. I talked about the fact, too, that at least here on the MacCast, I try to be upfront and let you know when I'm moving into a rumor story. So if you need to skip it or if you want to avoid spoilers, you hopefully can. And also that we have the chapter markers in there. So if we do get to a rumor segment, you can just simply skip over it. And many of you said, hey, Adam, you actually do a pretty good job. You don't necessarily spoil things maybe in some of the ways that some of the other podcasts or websites do. And I thought that was very nice. Got compliments on how I handle the rumors. So I appreciate that. But also some of you, and so then a lot of you said, yeah, I'm kind of in the same mind frame as you, Adam. It doesn't really spoil it for me. You know, I like watching the keynotes still just to see what's confirmed and that there are still some surprises in there, right? They don't always get everything right. And it's sometimes fun just to see how wrong they got a lot of things, because a lot of those rumors end up being wrong. And that's a part that I enjoy. And many of you mentioned that as well. But still, some of you did agree with our caller that the volume of rumors can really detract from the surprise during the keynotes. And I have to agree with that, right? We start getting rumors. I mean, we just had one in the episode today, 2 years out. 2 years ahead of anything happening, we're starting to talk about something. And I, you know, I like to talk about that stuff. I like to speculate on the directions that Apple might be going in. I think that personally is fun for me, and I think it's fun for a lot of people. I can, again, totally understand those of you who don't find that fun, that you'd prefer to kind of just be surprised and go along blissfully unaware and just concentrate on other things in the Apple ecosystem. It's kind of hard to cover Apple news, I think, without covering some of the rumors, but I did hear what many of you were saying, and I think it's added, at least for me, a new awareness of what I'm doing, and I'll try to do a little bit better at maybe limiting the scope of the rumors. We're not going to not cover rumors here on the MacCast, but I think in the future, we'll try and focus maybe on the more fun bits, the kind of bigger bits and pieces, and maybe not so frequently recovering a lot of the rumors, because I know that crops up, right? The rumors get repeated over and over again, and that can get a little bit tiring, and I can totally understand that perspective. So again, I'll try to always be upfront, kind of give you the spoiler alert. Hey, we're going into rumor territory here. Give you a second to maybe skip ahead or jump to the next segment if you don't want to be spoiled by that stuff. But beyond that, I don't think we need to do any changes. So I appreciate everybody who sent in their feedback. I welcome additional feedback. So if you have more comments and thoughts on this, shoot me an email. Send me an audio comment. MacCast@gmail.com. Another news story that I wanted to kind of follow up on and give some opinion on is the story that broke last time about Apple sending Siri recordings to be evaluated by humans to improve Siri. There was a whole hubbub created. I'm trying to remember the source now, and it's escaping me. But basically, it was discovered, quote-unquote, although it's not anything that Apple ever denied or hid, that in some scenarios, Apple takes anonymized audio recordings of the things that you say to Siri and sends them to a contractor to be evaluated so that they can use that information to improve the Siri experience in the future. And Apple has always been upfront with their terms of service, explaining that those recordings do get sent up to Apple servers, that they're anonymized, that Apple keeps them for 6 months for analysis. What they never went into was that some of that analysis was being done by humans. And I guess there was this general assumption, although I never personally assumed this, but apparently there was some sort of general assumption that it was just computers, artificial intelligence, analyzing those audio recordings. Well, turned out there was actually some people behind it, and that was the thing we talked about on the last episode. It was a whole big hubbub. Well, this week, Apple came out and said, and that whole program is called Gradings, their Siri grading program, and they came out this week and said, hey, we are suspending that program while we do some additional reviewing of our policies around that, and oh, by the way, we're planning on adding an opt-out feature in a future update of iOS so that you can opt out of having those recordings evaluated by human beings, or probably those recordings included in any kind of future enhancements or analysis. And while I think that is a thing to do, I'm not necessarily sure from my point of view that it was the right thing for Apple to do. It feels like the actually wrong move to me to suspend the program, because it makes, in my opinion, Apple look like they're admitting that they did something wrong, and I really don't think they did anything wrong in this scenario. Again, I think they could have been a little bit more deliberate, so if they did do anything quote-unquote wrong, it was not being transparent enough, explaining that the records were being specifically reviewed by humans in some cases. And it was, you know, Apple has said it's in a very, very few cases. Something like 1% of all of the analysis is actually done by humans. So this is not a huge program, which is another reason why I think they had no problems just suspending it. But I don't think they needed to do that, because they weren't really doing anything wrong. I think they could have still implemented these changes, which I think are good ones. The ability to opt out, in my opinion, should have always been there. I don't know why they didn't have it there from the very beginning. But they could implement those things without suspending the program. But it just felt like lip service to the people who were complaining for really no reason, in my opinion. But that's just my thoughts on it, kind of how I felt about it. You might feel differently, so you can share those opinions with me, right? We are always open to communication here on the MacCast. This is a community podcast. Your opinions and comments are valued just as much as mine, so I'd love to share those on anything that we talk about. So always feel free to send those in. I know I talk about that and mention how you can send those in a lot, but I do that because I want to get your feedback, and it's great to hear from you, those of you in the community. So please send those comments in, maccast@gmail.com. But the opt-out should have always been there, in my opinion. I am hoping that it is an opt-in feature when they implement it, not an opt-out, not something where you're automatically opted in and then you have to opt out. I could see it being set up as an additional question, maybe during the Siri setup process, and it says, hey, would you like to help us improve Siri? If you do, click this button and opt in to share your data. And here is how your data is going to be shared. Your audio recordings will be reviewed by computers and could be reviewed by humans. Are you okay with this? Yep. Let me in. I want to help you out. Just like they do with the operating system crash reports, right? During that setup wizard, they could also put the question in that area too. Hey, do you want to share this data with Apple for the purposes of improving our products and services? And I think it's a natural question. Again, I don't know why they weren't doing it already. But just in case all of this stuff really bothers you, and I don't, I don't begrudge anybody who says this is too much. Like, I don't want my voice recorded and sent to humans, even anonymously, to be analyzed. It doesn't sit well with me. I don't like it. Like I said, I feel you should have always had the ability to opt out. It's coming in a future update, but what do you do in the meantime, right? Until Apple makes these changes, Apple has your recordings. Well, you can actually get them removed and deleted from Apple's servers, and it's not too hard to do, although it may impact your use of dictation and Siri. But if you want to get rid of those recordings now and make sure that Apple doesn't have any recordings of you, now keep in mind, again, in most cases, they only have about 1% of all of the Siri recordings retained. So chances are they don't even have any recordings of you, but just in case, and you don't want to have to worry about it, you can remove them by simply disabling Siri and the dictation features on your Macs and your devices. And unfortunately for this to work, you do have to do it on each device individually. So on the Mac, if you go into the Apple menu and go into System Preferences, then click on Siri and click the Disable Enable Ask Siri option. I know it's disable the feature called Enable Ask Siri. Turn that off, and that will get rid of the Siri recordings. And then go back to your System Preferences, click on the Keyboard System Preferences, and then click on the Dictation tab in the upper right and turn off Dictation. Turn off those two features, and when you turn that off, it will remove any recordings that Apple has, even those that are up on their servers. On iOS, it's a similar thing. You're going to tap on Settings. You're going to go into Siri and Search. You're going to turn off the Listen for Hola Siri option, and you are going to turn off and the press the side button for Siri. So basically, turn off any way that you can activate Siri. Apple will give you a warning that you've just turned off Siri. Go back, tap Settings, tap General, tap Keyboard, and turn off the dictation. So turn off the dictation feature. And again, that will remove all of the recordings for that iOS device. And the reason you need to do it for every Mac and device separately is because those recordings are tied to an anonymized identifier that is assigned per device, and that is not associated in any way with like an iCloud account. So they can't, when you disable one device, go and attach that to any other device. That's part of the anonymization that they do. Not attached to an iCloud account, not attached to an Apple ID. So the only way to do it is disable it from all of your devices. And if you ever turn on any of the Siri or dictation services in the future, those recordings could get captured and could get retained. So you won't be able to re-enable these features if you don't want Apple to have your recordings until they enable or turn on this new feature where you can actually opt out. So just a little follow-up on the whole Siri listening, recording, human analysis story, and a great tip that I found on how you can actually disable those recordings or get those recordings removed if that's something that you care to do. Every once in a while here on the MacCast, we get a mystery. We get a stumper. I get questions from you. You ask me about things. Generally, I can find an answer or get you an answer to your Mac, Apple technical problems. But every now and then, we get a case of something that, for me, is unsolvable. And we have that this week, the case of the missing comments. And if one of you in the audience can resolve this one, I think there may be a Scooby snack in it for you. But here is Lauren had this question dealing with a feature in Preview. So here's what Lauren had to say.
Hi, Adam. This is Lauren. I have a question about Preview in macOS Mojave. So I used to have this function where I could print the notes and highlights that I had put into a PDF and then enable Show Notes in the preview panel of the printing dialog. And then it would sort of put all the notes that I had made onto my PDF onto the left-hand side of the page and have nice little lines guiding the eye from where the note was placed to actually where the text of the note appeared. And apparently, since macOS High Sierra, this functionality is not there anymore. It will only show you the sort of note icon on the page. It will show you the lines guiding the eyes. It will show you the column on the left-hand side of the page, but all the notes that you've made and that you've typed are not there anymore. I've been doing some searches, and apparently a lot of people seem to have this problem, but I haven't come across any solution to that yet. So I was wondering whether you noticed this, and whether you had some ideas on how to fix that, or whether this is sort of a general bug that has been there since the inception of High Sierra or something. Thank you. Enjoy the show. Take care.
So unfortunately, I did not notice this bug or issue because I didn't know about this feature. And this feature is really, really cool. So for those of you who don't know, if you are using Preview, I guess on anything earlier than High Sierra, you could add your annotations, your notes, your highlighting with notes, whatever you want, to your document in Preview. And then when you went to the print dialog box, there's a little checkbox that says show notes. And when you do that, it sort of shrinks your PDF down a little bit and gives it a left-hand column where it will display those notes. And then, just like Lauren said, give you like a line pointing to where that note is. Really cool stuff. But since macOS High Sierra, and I can confirm, Lauren, that this is a bug that was introduced in High Sierra, those notes don't show up anymore. You get the line, you get the indication of where on the page the note was with either an icon or a highlight or whatever it might be, but that line, while it's pointing to something, has no note text associated with it. It's just blank in that area. And why has this bug been around for two versions of the operating system? I do not know. There doesn't appear to be a workaround, but I have to tell you, when I went to look at this and confirmed that it was a bug, to me, it seems like a fundamental issue with the PDF engine at the OS level. But what was interesting was, it does look like the notes might actually be there, like the text might be there. But my theory is that it's putting white text on a white background, and then you can't actually see it. So I thought maybe there's some sort of way you can like hack in a font change or something. I don't know what's going on there, but we have a lot of really clever people in the MacCast community, Lauren, and I have a feeling somebody might have at least a workaround or some sort of fix. Now, I was able to come up with somewhat of a workaround using my favorite PDF editor, PDF Pen. You can add notes and comments in PDF Pen, and those will print, although they're not done in the same way as Preview. You don't get the little line. The way PDF Pen does it is it puts the notes sort of referenced almost like footers at the bottom underneath the actual PDF. So they handle it a little bit differently. I might reach out to the folks at PDF Pen, the developers over there, because I know them pretty well, and they might have an answer to this. Because again, if it's fundamentally something with the underlying PDF engine in macOS, they would know that sort of thing. I will tell you that with PDF Pen, I could not get it to print out a note that was on a highlight. So if you highlight text and add a note to it, you can do that in PDF Pen. You can also do that in Preview. Those notes didn't print out. It was just the ones that were specifically comments or notes. So like you said, the little yellow post-it notes you could put on a document. So that did work. So that might be an option if you have a different PDF editor. But you know, Preview is a pretty powerful editor, and a lot of people really like to use it. And so I wouldn't blame you with wanting to stick to that, because again, that printout that I saw, if it worked, that would be great. And so I understand why you're missing this feature. This missing feature, right, is really annoying. So let's throw it out to the community. Do you have a fix or a workaround for Lauren and this PDF preview thing. If you do, shoot us an email, an audio comment, mattcast@gmail.com. I will share that with him, and we will share your answers on a future episode of the MacCast. So there you go. Best we can do. See what the community has to say on this one. All right. Last thing that I want to talk about to you today is the 16-inch MacBook Pro that's rumored to be coming this fall. I am getting more and more excited about this thing. We talked about it in the news, I think, last week, but there was more information that came out this week on what kinds of processors this thing's going to have. And I don't need a new MacBook Pro, so I think I'm partially talking to you about this to see if you can talk me down from a ledge and stop me from maybe spending what I would assume is going to be around $3,000 on a new Mac that I don't really need, but one that I think I'm going to really, really want, right? And this is a dilemma. Maybe this is just the conversation to have, right? We as Mac fans, as Apple fans, we constantly grapple with the whole want-need issue, right? Do I absolutely need this, or is it just something that I really, really want? And I sometimes feel like if it's something that you want and it's something that you have budgeted for and you can pay for and it's not going to be painful and it's not going to take away from other things that you actually do need, I kind of don't see anything wrong with that, right? If you've worked hard, you've earned the money, you've saved your pennies, you scraped, and you can afford it, and it's not at the detriment of, you know, keeping yourself fed or keeping your family provided for or putting a roof over your head, then, you know, what's the harm in spending that money? But, you know, sometimes, too, it's just a practical thing, right? My 15-inch MacBook Pro that I have, my 2015 right now, just got a new battery put in it on Apple's recall program. It is a great machine. It's got a ton of great ports on it. It does everything that I need it to do. It's plenty fast enough. I've never had issues saying, oh, this thing's too slow. But a new Mac Pro, and, you know, my machine, it's 4 years old at this point, right? It's done great service for a number of years. I have no doubt that I could probably have it for another 4 years and it would be just fine. But at some point you want an upgrade, right? And this 16-inch MacBook Pro is looking great because it's going to essentially replace the current 15-inch model. At least this is what the rumors are saying, because it's going to be a 16-inch screen in the same size. They're going to, again, reduce the bezels. That's kind of Apple's new modus operandi for doing upgrades on products now. And it would be thinner. It would be potentially, I don't think it's going to be lighter. I would guess that it's going to be about the same weight. But it's going to have Thunderbolt 3 and USB-C and all that fun stuff. So lots of good reasons to upgrade. And plus, like I said, we heard this week that it's likely going to have the latest 9th generation Intel Coffee Lake refresh processors. That means up to 8 cores in an i9 running at 2.4 gigahertz with Turbo Boost, up to 5 gigahertz and updated Intel UHD graphics 630. I would also expect that it has the latest or updated Radeon Pro GPUs as well. So really, really shaping up to be probably a pretty powerful system. But here's my dilemma too. Notebook or desktop? Because as I've said on the MacCast many times in the past, more and more when I'm going mobile, I'm taking my iPad Pro with me. I'm not taking my 15-inch MacBook Pro. It sits on my desk and runs as a desktop. So I'm also very intrigued or very interested in potentially upgrading to a new iMac, like a 27-inch 5K iMac, which is a gorgeous machine, would be about the same price, and I'd probably get a little more bang for my buck versus the portable. I've always had portables I started out with Mac desktops, but I've had a portable Mac since the original white G3 iBook. And so that tells you how many years I've been living with a notebook. So I'm waffling, you know, do I go back to a desktop? Do I stick with a notebook? And again, should I even buy this notebook? So how do you deal with that dilemma, right? Like, oh, I just want this thing. It's going to be so amazing. I've been kind of wanting a new Mac for a while. I get to this about every 4 to 5 years. That's kind of my my own personal time frame. It's like I'm fine for about 4 years, and then I start to get the itchy, twitchy feeling, money burning a hole in my pocket, like, hey, it's time to upgrade. Unlike my iPhone, which I upgrade every year, which is also crazy, right? I probably should stop doing that. I generally try to justify that saying I need it for the show. I don't know if that's so true anymore. And the fall is looking to be very expensive if I'm buying a new iPhone and a new MacBook Pro. But the good news is I am that kind of person who I will not buy it if I don't have the money for it. So I'm saving now. I have no doubt. I've got a budget set aside for Mac upgrades in the future. So it is something I can actually technically afford. It's not going to, you know, put me in the poorhouse. I'm not going to think I'm destitute. So I probably should just go for it because I get a lot of enjoyment out of it. And like, that's another part of this thing too, right? If you can afford it and it's going to bring you enjoyment, even if it doesn't bring you more necessarily productivity, although, you know, any new hardware is going to bring you some level of productivity, even if all you're doing is web surfing and those sorts of things. It would certainly help with some of the podcasting stuff. And so there's many ways that I can justify this thing. What I really probably can't justify is the fact that there's nothing wrong with my current computer. Like, it doesn't need to be replaced. It would be more just doing it for my own emotional benefit and just to have a cool new thing from Apple, which, there's something to be said for that. It's not a bad reason to do something. So I don't know. What do you think? How do you feel about this stuff? How do you feel about upgrades? How do you feel about Apple's current cycle? How do you feel about a 16-inch MacBook Pro? Share your thoughts and opinions. I welcome your comments on any of this, all of it, none of it, whatever you want to talk about. Shoot me a comment or email, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Thank you for hanging out with me. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. Finally, if you want to follow me online between shows, you can find me on social media, my Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Also on Instagram at MacCast, pretty much MacCast anywhere you're going to find me. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.